When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on with David Fowler this morning from Associated Bank in our Thought Leader Chair. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Before we get underway here, remind our audience briefly what you do at Associated Bank.
I work on the capital market side of the bank, where we help our clients manage the financial risks that arise from currencies and interest rates primarily.
We like to fondly refer to you as our Brexit expert as well, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we had this deal go through, and you know, Brexit is moving forward, but there it seems to be some choppy waters already. There was a situation where the EU and the UK had some sort of problem with COVID vaccines involving Northern Ireland. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is one of the kind of own goals that the EU has kind of scored for itself. I have to say it was quickly reversed, but there has been this ongoing issue between the European Union and AstraZeneca in terms of vaccine supply. And there was a feeling within the European Union that AstraZeneca was providing more vaccine to the UK than they were to the EU. So in Ireland, there is vaccine manufacturing going on. And what they said is that any export of vaccine anywhere in the European Union, so including Ireland, would need to be reported to the EU before it occurred. So as we all know, Northern Ireland is part of the UK. Any vaccine going out of the Republic of Ireland across the border into Northern Ireland would be an export into a third country, so therefore it had to be reported. However, as we all know, the whole idea, you know, because of the Good Friday Accord going back 20 years ago, is that, you know, you would have a seamless border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. In terms of health and things like this, both governments cooperate fairly closely in order to have a kind of consistent approach across the entire island. And this, you know, basically was seen as an affront to the accord. I think the British government used it a little bit to beat up the EU as well. But certainly, it wasn't their finest moment. It was reversed within hours, and the EU has made, you know, copious apologies about it.
The UK hopes to perhaps use this incident as a chance to refine the Brexit deal where Northern Ireland is concerned. Do you think they'll make any headway with that?
It's hard to know. You know, like we've discussed, you know, Brexit being kind of like a dog's dinner. Well, the Northern Ireland Accord is the Thanksgiving feast of all dog's dinners. It really is an agreement that is basically unworkable. But it's the one that the British brought to the European Union. It's the one that the British government lauded and said was, you know, this was the way ahead and would give Northern Ireland the best of both worlds. You know, and this was, you know, the British government less than a year ago saying all this stuff. Now, once it's in operation, people are realizing that, you know, this thing has got a lot of issues to it, because you have a situation where you have a country that's politically united to the UK and economically united to the European Union. And there has to be a border somewhere, whether it's going to be between Northern Ireland and the Republic, or whether it's going to be Northern Ireland and the rest of Great Britain. There's got to be a border, and this is going to cause a problem. And it was sold as providing kind of seamless access for Northern Ireland to both the UK and the EU, which is not true. And the British government knew this. They had internal reporting done by both the Department of Trade and others that outlined exactly what the issues were. So it is a problem. I think there will be some tweaking to it. Certainly the British will not get a 2-year extension, but they might get an extra couple of months. But it's going to be a problem. Yeah. There's just no way around it.
You know, corporations have been finally getting into the nitty-gritty of this and trying to see, you know, they have been trying to see how it's going to impact them. And some of them are figuring it out now. There's one story where the chairman of JD Sport, one of the big sporting goods companies there, said it's considerably worse than he feared, and it's going to be double-digit millions in extra costs for his company.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even to bring it down into, JD Sports is quite a large corporation, but even if you take it to a smaller scale, there was reporting on a cheese company that operates, you know, their business model is to basically sell kind of sampler packs of cheese to mainland Europe. And this would be various types of English cheese that would be sent over, you know, bought by people in Paris or Dusseldorf or whatever. And, you know, prior to January 1st, this was pretty much, you know, you pack the cheese, you send it out, and, you know, people are eating it the next day. Now, you know, they have so much red tape and regulations to go through that the kind of box that was costing, you know, about $30, now attracts just one document alone, a veterinary certificate, because it's an animal product export into the EU from a third country. That veterinary certificate costs $180, and you have to have one for each individual shipment. So if the shipment is 20 ounces or 20 tons, it still has to have this one certificate. So in a retail business, this has completely closed the European Union to this company. And, you know, you've seen reports of companies being told unofficially by HR Customs that they might need to set up some kind of a distribution center within the European Union so that they can export in bulk and then do the kind of breakdowns within the European Union.
There was a report by the Road Haulage Association, which is sort of like one of the big transportation associations here in the U.S., which has been tracking exports. They said since January 1st, exports to the EU from Britain had fallen 68%. If that's a trend that's happening, that seems unsustainable.
I think it is, you know, and we're seeing it. You know, I was just looking at something earlier this week where they tracked an export of a truck load of fish exports from the west coast of the UK just to get to Calais, which is on the west coast of France, so popular, you know, ferry route. This was taking, before January 1st, this would take them about 4 hours to do all in. Now it's taking nearly 24 hours. Because they have to fill out 71 pages of paperwork to get it through customs. You know, we've seen in Ireland, basically what would happen for exports from Ireland to continental Europe, often they went through Britain. That has virtually stopped now. The ferry companies have added 5 ships. They could add 10, and they would still be full. And more importantly, I hate to become economic-y about this one, but, you know, they've looked at the elasticity of demand for imports for both the UK and the EU. And the bottom line is that the UK will continue to import more things from the EU than the EU will import from the UK if prices go up. Which means that, you know, if you're a UK exporter, you've got a problem. And that is, I think, something that's going to affect both UK companies, but also it's an issue for US companies, for example, that have operations, either manufacturing operations, which they have in the UK to, you know, supply the rest of the European Union, or in particular, US operations, like if you're an accounting firm or a law firm, and you set up an operation in, say, London to provide advice on, you know, US accounting law or US accounting regulations or US law to European companies that might be doing business in the US. Without this idea of equivalency, which is what, you know, everybody had until January 1st, if you're that law firm and you want to operate, you know, provide advice to companies in 10 different European member states, you now have to apply 10 times. So each member state, there's an application. You have to go through that. You may be accepted. You may not be. You may be accepted at all. You may be accepted on none. All of which makes it so much more difficult. And what I think you're seeing, and we're seeing it both from professional services, we're certainly seeing it financial services, for example, like the ICE has moved their operations for natural gas from London to continental Europe. We're going to see, I think, a lot of the large law firms and accounting firms, the US ones, moving to the mainland mainland Europe. And we're going to see, you know, so all that we're happening, all that we're seeing is this kind of moving of operations away from the UK back into the European Union, so to speak, for operations that are targeted at EU members, the companies in the EU member states.
Yeah, and along those lines, David, do you see U.S. investors shying away from anything that may be impacted with the Brexit, some of the things that we've been talking about? Are U.S. investors shying away from it?
I think you will. I think right now what you're having is that no one's kind of doing anything new because they want to see how everything pans out. But unless the equivalency thing can be sorted out, professional services firms are going to have to face a pretty stark decision. In terms of manufacturers, it's going to be a similar thing. And, you know, we started off talking about Northern Ireland. You know, Northern Ireland was a very popular place for people to set up, U.S. companies to set up operations, because there were some very attractive incentives to go there, and it was part of the EU. And, you know, a number of companies in the Chicago area have operations in Northern Ireland. If the Northern Ireland Accord changes, they may be facing now a situation where they can either fulfill a demand within the UK or have to move in order to fulfill demand in the EU, but you can't do both. And that's going to be a decision that's going to be hard for companies to make, because obviously they've made investments, and if one is leaving, more will leave. So how does that impact on the value, the residual value of the investment you've made? It's not easy. I don't think people have decided yet what they're going to do. I think it's too early to tell. We've only been doing this for about 6 weeks. But, you know, by this time next year, I think certainly things will be a lot clearer. And I think that's when you'll start seeing some of the, you know, companies having to move or certainly realign how they're doing things.
David, great chat as always. We appreciate it. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, you can always call us on the desk, which is 866-524-8836, or by email. My email address is david.fowler@associatedbank.com.
David, we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve.